from day one, pimps will literally sit there and brainwash these girls not to trust us. Oh, cops, all they want to do is lock your ass up, call you a whore, do this, that, and the other thing. And what have we done for ages? Exactly that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I did it. I did exactly what the pimp said I was going to do. So now we're in the process of changing that. And we're looking at the pimp as the asshole. The pimp is the one we want to get locked up. The trafficker who's exploiting people.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redman, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
111,
1, 10. You trying to be a street cop? Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training, and this one's going to be a good one today, folks. Tom Stack, human trafficking, sex trafficking. This is his expertise. He had 26 years in Maryland. He's now associated with a mayor's office as the human trafficking expert. He runs a unit there. He's been one instructor with us for years now. He has one of the most profound and impactful classes where he literally teaches police officers the signs and how to stop trafficking pimps in their tracks, put them in jail. All these things we need to know as law enforcement. He will show you, and he's going to share some of the stuff on this podcast. So stay tuned. This is going to be like being in his classroom.
Like, I'm helping this dude. This dude hit me up on Facebook. He's from Sioux Falls, Iowa. And I'm helping him out with like a search warrant for like a massage parlor. Like,
oh, shit.
I've helped him out with all. I've been on the phone with him for like ever. So he contacted me off of off the Facebook page. I think the Facebook page is awesome. It's I've started a new thing called Pimp of the Week. So every Thursday is Trafficking Thursday. So I couldn't. A couple weeks ago, I was in Florida, so I was kind of like vacationing with a beer in my hand. So I wasn't doing it then. But I posted one today. So Pimp of the Week, and I had a real good, real. I called him an ass hat, and just these guys just trafficking these kids and stuff like that. So this guy from Sioux, I think it was Sioux Falls, Iowa. He's up there close to like South Dakota, up there in the corner. He hits me up and talks about massage parlors. And he's like, hey, we got these massage parlors and I've been assigned to get rid of them. And I have like, no idea how to do them. I have no clue what I'm doing. I said, I'll help you out, man. So we've talked on the phone a number of times. We've emailed back and forth. And I told him the easiest way to do it. I mean, when I was doing those investigations, we didn't like sending somebody in there to get naked and get a massage. You just put yourself in a trick bag. I mean, these people are just looking for a reason to exploit you or turn it on you. Like, because like when I teach my class, I do a block on massage parlors, and I talk about a case I had where the massage parlor owner started to bribe me. She was paying me $2,000 a month to tip her off when we were coming in. She didn't realize that I wasn't a dirty cop. I was a clean cop, and we locked her ass up and charged her accordingly. So we never sent guys in there. I mean, there's police departments have sent guys in there and gotten hand jobs and to completion. And I was like, then they get themselves in trouble. And so it's just not worth it. So I told them the easy way to do it is just to talk to guys when they come out of there and just say, hey, listen, man, I said, you know, you're not the target of my investigation. I want to go out to this place. We got complaints on this place. There's human trafficking going on in these places. So, you know, just talk to me. And, you know, most guys will talk to you. They'll kind of bullshit you a little bit as to, you know, like, oh, I just got a massage. Oh, the old football injury, you know. And it's like, yeah, yeah, no problem. You know, yeah, whatever. But then you get the guys who'll tell you what happened. And you get a couple guys like that coming out of there, and you write a search warrant. And so I told them what to do, and I sent them some information on you know, what to look for in the search warrant, and, you know, where, how to look for it, where to look for it. Because I tell you, in these massage parlors, these jokers are like pack rats, man. They hide shit everywhere. I mean, I've found shit in ceiling tiles, in the fabric softeners, like halfway down, a couple $1,000s, hide shit everywhere. So I was like telling them where to look and stuff like that, and different things to look for. So he hit me up and said, "Hey, man, I got my search warrant, and I'm going to hit it in about a week or so, and I'll let you know how much we get." Because he's going to get a lot of money. Those cases are really difficult when it comes to human trafficking, because the victims, if they are being victimized, are not going to really trust you as law enforcement, and then they'll also disappear. Like Flushing, New York, is like the black hole of trafficking Asians. It's like they go in there and they fucking disappear. You'll never see them again. And so we've had a number of cases. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a buddy of mine who works for HSI. He used to be a Virginia Beach vice cop, and now he works for HSI. And I was talking to him about massage parlors. He goes, "Yeah, you know, these things are really hard to do." I said, "Yeah, you guys won't even do them. They're so hard because the money goes up to, there's millions of dollars involved, billions of dollars involved. But the money just goes up to New York." So I was happy to help this guy out. I hope he gets a freaking shit ton of cash, shuts the place down. I told him other methods to get rid of him by using other than law enforcement, using like permitting services and the fire marshal and just different people who can go in there and revoke their permits and shit like that. And so that's what I did, because I basically financially screwed all these people, and I was, you know, I just squeezed them. And so that was, so massage parlors are out there. They're never going to go away.
No.
We call them affectionately rub and tugs. And you know, even actually the place they advertise that is called Rub Maps, you know. So they're never going to go away, but they're out there. And, you know, I think law enforcement, they just know how to look for it and how to effectively go in there and do that. And like I said, I'm more than happy to help out. And there's different, like what we started doing it towards the end of my career, is we started just to really screw with them. We used to write into the search warrant massage tables. So we would literally show up with a steak body truck and take all their massage tables. We show up with a toolkit. We just disassemble all of them. And you know what? Because now they can't massage. And basically they all end up going to another jurisdiction. So we kicked them all out of my county.
You ever look at a massage parlor or look into a massage parlor and find out it's legit?
You can tell. Okay. And, you know, that's a couple of things I cover in my class is some of the things. Because, listen, I love a good massage, and I know where to go. And so there's a lot of really good ethical massage therapists. The one thing is if you're watching a massage place and it's only dudes going in, I mean, there's dudes going in every half hour, you know, and, you know, you see guys, you know, take their wedding rings off and stick them in their pocket.
Oh,
and you see shit like that. And you never see women go in. There's a sign. If you go in there and you're looking around in the massage room, you see a tissue box sitting on the nightstand, or you see Johnson's baby oil. Like, have you ever gotten a real massage, right?
Yes. Let me stop for a second here. The place I go to is not far from here. They beat the living piss out of you. And it's a bargain deal. And I knew when I went there, because people were like, "Oh, you should go to massage," like Hand in Stone and these other places. They're always packed. You can never get a same day massage. And I cannot have a dude touching me. I'm sorry. One time I called, I had a real, my back was killing me. And they're like, "Hey," the guy's name actually was Hans. They're like, "Well, Hans is very good." I'm like, "All right, put me in." And a minute later I called back and I'm like, "Hey, listen, I just canceled the appointment." And I'm like, "Well, what's the problem?" I'm like, "I can't have a dude touching me while I'm naked. I'm sorry. And if you liked it, that's fine. I couldn't do that. I would be a wreck the whole time. I just can't do it," right? But the place I go to when I went in, they don't have like private rooms. They have sheets, and there's many people in one room. So they kind of just, I mean, you know, you strip down and everything, but there is no way any hanky-panky's going on at all, because you're right next, there's women in there. You're right next to it. It's separated by curtains. you know, you could hear the other massages going on. It's a little strange. That's probably why it's cheap. But this girl gets on me, and she's probably 115, 120 pounds. She's like a spider monkey, but her elbows, she's just driving her elbows down my back. Dude, I got to tell you, I'm down for the count for a day. That's 24 hours. I can't touch a weight. I'm like literally recovering from it. That stuff is brutal, but it's really good for you.
But if you go into a massage parlor or massage place and you see Johnson's baby oil, because I guarantee she didn't use Johnson's baby oil.
No.
Or
the pump. They had
and
the
if
pump
you're,
or whatever.
And if you're really suspicious and you're not sure, bring a black light with you. And turn it on. And if the walls look clean, you're okay.
Is that real? Do people do that?
No, I just kidding.
Oh, I was going to say. Holy shit. I can imagine.
I always say, because, I mean, some of the pictures I show in my presentation are like some massage rooms. It's like, you know, just turn it, go in there and turn it black. So if you see shit like that, like Johnson's baby oil, tissues like there, and a girl got a runny nose, you know, it's like, just don't touch anything and just turn around and get the fuck out. But they're all over the place, and they use different various techniques to try and get around law enforcement, especially with the massage, like reflexology or acupressure, which are all bullshit, you know. But you know, they use different things like that. But they're out there, and you know, and they have a lot of money in them. If you have them and you want to, if you want to generate some money, some funds for your department, I used to average between 20 and 30 grand every time I hit one of those places.
Wow.
And they just got a lot of money. And there's, if you can just, and then you can also follow the money. You know, it's difficult following the money with the Asian massage parlors because, like I said, all roads lead to Flushing, New York. And man, they go there and they just disappear. I don't know what they do with them. They ship them back to China, or who knows what. It's crazy.
How do you combat the ones that like come to you? So. Is that still in the same realm of a girl who does massages, but they're sexual massages, and they come to you? So it's a vice squad. You know, I've seen that as well.
Yeah, we didn't really mess around with too many of those because a lot of those girls are just, it's straight up prostitution under the guise of, or the ruse of a massage.
Okay.
You know, they're advertising on the list crawler or like it used to be Backpage or for escorts. You can tell, you know, just, you know, it's like, you know, there's this one picture I show in my slide. It's like, it says foot massage, but this shows a picture of a guy getting his back massage. I was like, yeah, this guy's really enjoying his fucking foot massage. Right. You know, I'm sure when he flips over, you know, then that's when the prostitution happens. Because all that stuff is you don't go in there and say, hey, man, you know, how much is it going to be for a blowjob or how much for, I mean, if you do that, you're gonna first of all, they don't speak hardly any English, so they're not going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about? So it's all how much money lay on the table. You know, if you put $150 on the table, you might get, you know, you get more. So there's a lot of, the solicitation doesn't really go on verbally. It's usually, you know, just by, you know, how much money you put on the table.
Interesting.
So that's another reason why I say just rip the dudes when they come out. Yeah, paid $150. What'd you get? I got a hand job. Okay, cool.
When you rip these guys, I'm assuming you're going to get them a few blocks over, not in front of the store, right?
Yeah.
How shit scared are these people when you...
You know, it's funny because you get just different types. Okay, you get the guy who, like the guy who slid his wedding ring off and stuck it in his pocket and he's putting it back on when you're pulling him over or stopping him. Like we used to stop him and just say, you know, and I always tell him, I said, listen, man, I said, just relax. I said, you know, I'm not here for you. I'm here for them. And we got complaints. There's human trafficking. Those guys sometimes will talk to you. Then you get, you know, oh, I don't need to talk to you. I said, yeah, you're right. You don't. I'll tell you what. I'll say, here's what I'll do. I'll come to your house because I got your tag number. I know where you live. So I'll come to your house, say, tonight around 6 o'clock. Is that a good time? That's dinner time, right? And that's the last thing his wife needs is to hear, oh, honey, the vice detective's at the front door for you. And now he just shits up creek. But then you got guys who are just like, just arrogant as fuck. And they're like, oh, fuck you. You know, I don't have to talk to you. And those are the guys I usually screw with them. I just put shit in their head. And I would be like, you know, okay, yeah, you're right. You don't have to talk to me. That's fine. That's cool. I said, just FYI, I talked to the guy who was in there just before you, and he got a hand job, and he said he ejaculated all over the girl's hand. I bet you $100 she didn't wash her hands before she rubbed your back. And you see him kind of like start to cringe a little bit.
Oh,
you know,
man.
Just to fuck with him a little bit. You know, it's like, yeah, you're right. You don't have to talk to me, asshole, but we'll get you down the road. But they're fun cases to do. If you can get the human trafficking angle on it, it's good. But it's really, really, it's really, really difficult to do that. But like I said, there are good cases to do.
Do feds or other agencies get involved when you're doing human trafficking? I believe that a lot of these ICE agencies and stuff like that.
HSI is heavily into human trafficking. It's pretty much all their major offices have a human trafficking. Down in Baltimore, where I work, they have HSIs very, very active. And then when I was with Montgomery County, you know, our vice section, I was a member of the FBI Child Exploitation Task Force. And that's all we did was we would go out and look for kids. And, you know, because my whole vice career, I started out doing massage parlors. I shut all those down. I had to know how to find something else to do. I started doing Latino brothels. I shut all those down. And then I started to go to look at the internet, and I started looking at children and child sex trafficking. And that became a passion, because nothing pissed me off more than some asshole pimping out a 13-year-old girl.
It's crazy.
You know, and I had a daughter that was at that age when I was doing that stuff, and it's nuts. And it's like, how can someone fucking do that? It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, sometimes you see some of these stories and you're just like, God damn it, like, what kind of human being does it to another human being? You know what I mean? And then the crazy thing is, in these bail reform cities and shit, these guys are right back out. They're not going to jail. You know, it's wild.
What pisses me off even more is, and you think about, how can somebody do that to another human being? But then we have cases where, how could you do that to your child?
Oh, to their own?
Yes. We have cases where people are pimping out their children. We have there's a guy I know out in Louisville. He had a case where it was a grandfather pimping out his granddaughter.
Wow.
Now, that pisses me off. I mean, that son of a bitch needs to be buried under the jail.
Wow.
You know, and I'm waiting for that case to get adjudicated, because he's going to be my pimp of the week on traffic.
That's unbelievable. How did something like that happen?
You know, people traffic their children for various reasons. A lot of times it's because of narcotics. You know, mom's strung out on heroin.
Wow.
She don't look like, she can't make any money. So, you know what? I got my 14-year-old daughter, and people are willing to pay a lot of money to have sex with her. I'll take that money and go buy drugs.
Wild.
Or I can't pay the rent. Oh, you know, go to the landlord. I can't pay the rent. But you can have sex with my daughter. Because it doesn't have to be monetary. It doesn't have to be cash. It can be anything of value. So if he says, okay, you don't have to pay your rent this week, but I get to have sex with your 14-year-old daughter.
It's wild.
That's human trafficking, because that's something of value that's being traded for sex.
That's wild, because I got to tell you, if I was a landlord, they said to me, I go, your daughter's 14. What, are you fucking crazy? Right?
It happens.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And you know what? I'll tell you, Dennis, it happens more than we realize, because a lot of times it gets misdiagnosed as child abuse or just sex abuse of a child, or sexual solicitation of a minor. But it's human trafficking, and it's real, and especially in the big cities, where you have a lot of drugs, and you have these girls out there, these moms that are strung out on heroin or pills, and they're pimping their kids out. It's fucking sick.
What does life look like for a 13-year-old? Were they in school? Now they're not. Is anybody looking for them? 14-year-old? Like, are they still going back to school after being pimped out?
Yeah. I mean, a lot. I mean, we had one case where the mom was actually taking her daughter, like, after school up to the mall, shopping mall, and just trolling her around the shopping mall and giving guys blowjobs out behind the dumpster for $50. You know, it's like, you know, she was in school.
Did they know to go there to look for that woman?
They had like a little network. It was all in the Latino community. So it was all all word of mouth.
I was going to say, I'm picturing a mall. I'm there with my kids.
Yeah.
Or sure. I'm walking around, I'm going to get a pair of Nikes.
Yeah.
Or, exactly. You know, and then like some woman's like, hey, you want this, my ninth grade daughter, to blow you behind a dumpster?
Yeah. So it became word of mouth.
No shit.
And so there's like, it's spread in the community. Like, yeah, if you go up there and find this girl, you know, you can pay her to have, you know, get a blowjob or.
Wow.
And
are people ever getting caught in the act? Because the penalty's got to be very severe if you get caught doing something like that with a young kid.
Well, yeah. So if we caught, because and I talk about this in my class also, is I used to target predators, because there's a lot of fucking dudes out there that are willing to pay for sex with minors.
Wow.
And I used to go. It was fucking easy, like shooting fish in a barrel. It was so easy. And like, I would go on like these message boards, like you used to have Craigslist, but there's other ones out there. And I'd go on the Women for Men section, and I would just put a simple little post up, says, skipping school today, looking for a sugar daddy. And so, and I always, I cleverly use all dollar signs for my S's. And so when you clicked on that, it would bring you to the body of my, my message. It would say, skipping school today, who's looking to pay to play? And I would post that. I do it usually like around 11 o'clock on like a Tuesday. And it, in about 5 to 10 minutes, it would get flagged and taken down by someone would say, this is inappropriate, and take it down. But in 5 to 10 minutes, how many, I got a question for you. How many people hit me up? Because when you hit me back up, it goes to an email. It goes to my email. How many people emailed me in that 5 to 10 minutes on an average?
10.
40 to 50.
Wow.
40 to 50 sons of bitches out there are should be working, and they're out trolling for sex. But now they hit me up, and I talk to them, and I email them back. And everyone will be like, hey, how old are you? And I was like, I always say I'm 16, but I look older. And most of the guys are like, nope, don't worry about it. Call me when you're 18. I'm out. And then you have a handful of dudes who want to engage you in conversation. They're like, hey, you know, hey, what are you wearing? What are you doing? You know, like, you know, typing.
Wow.
Those are the guys typing with one hand.
Wild.
And I get rid of those guys. And then I get the guys who are like, hey, you know, I'm interested. You know, you cool with me being 16? Yeah, I'm cool. And then we would lock those assholes up. And we would set these stings up. We used to call them juvenile John stings. And we would set these assholes up. And we always did the takedowns near high school because we are building this rock solid case against these perverts, these sexual predators that they can't get out of. And we, you know, we would get a female UC to make a phone call. And I actually have an excellent example of that in my class of this detective, you know, just posing as a 16-year-old girl. And one thing she always did that was really critical is that when she would ask the question to the guy, she's like, hey, are you cool with me being 16? Because I'm cool with you no matter what. And, yep, I'm cool with you. Are you cool? I'm cool. Boom. She throws it on him, but she gets that element of the crime that she's only 16. And sexual solicitation of a minor is a felony in Maryland, and we would jack these assholes up. And they had – we never had one of them go to trial. They all pled out, and they all have to register as sex offenders.
Wow.
And we and that one case we had two guys that were literally legit sexual predators. One guy was arrested a couple years afterwards for sexual assault of a stranger over in Virginia.
Wow.
So –
You're getting bad, bad people.
Yeah, there's you know, because sexual deviance is a graduating crime. You know, these guys start out as peepers. You know, I mean, you remember, you know, the peepers. The next thing you know, they're exposing themselves. The next thing you know, they're groping somebody in the subway. The next thing you know, they're raping people.
Wow.
That is a graduating crime. It just keeps going up and up and up until they're full-blown rapists. So we actually got another guy who was actually, we knew he was a sexual predator because we locked him up before. And he actually sodomized a prostitute with a baseball bat.
Holy shit.
Yeah. He said to this girl, he says, you either I fuck you with this bat or I fuck you. And she goes, I'll take the bat. So he sodomized her with a bat and then beat her over the head with it and took her money.
Whoa.
And so he got out of jail. He was very wealthy from a very wealthy family. And we found out he was out and he was targeting girls. And he fell into the juvenile John sting. And he solicited this girl, well, solicited us, who he thought was a girl. He shows up and she was supposed to have $300. He had no money, but all he had was a knife.
Whoa.
So what do you think was going to happen there?
Wow.
So we locked his ass up, and he got a little jail time for that. I think he got a blanket party. We got to jail, too, which is always good for people like that. So this shit's out there. It's real, and it comes in, and human trafficking comes in all different forms. You know, like you have the kids, the minors that are out there.
That's wild,
and
man.
And the thing is every time I teach a class, whether I'm doing something for my like a small presentation at a community or teaching some firefighters or teach for street cop, I've always had people come up to me and says, you know what, I've seen that, I just didn't know what it was. So what my class does is changes mindset, and it really puts tools in your toolbox, because you're going to go out there on the street and you're going to say, oh shit, I had no idea. Mm. And now you know. And now you're gonna look at these girls as different, because I can tell you 400 or 500 girls in prostitution that I've spoken with, and not one of them ever aspired to be a prostitute.
Right. I heard that you say that 1,000 times.
And I can't say it enough, because When you,
I think about when you say that. Actually, it's one of those things that plays in my head. Again, people know me. I have some of the most severe attention deficit disorder in the world, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, not in the square peg in a fucking round hole school system environment. It was a complete prison for me. I have all these thoughts all day long, over and over again. And that one actually enters my head a lot. Is like I think about like nobody ever aspired to be. I thought of it yesterday, as a matter of fact. Aspired to be a hoe, right?
Right. Yeah, so when we took those aptitude tests, and you know, Billy wanted to be a fireman, and Janie wanted to be a nurse, and did anyone go, "Oh, I want to be a hooker"? You know, maybe you did. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean, I got to be honest with you, in my 20s, I pretty much acted like a hooker, to be quite honest.
But it's they become victims of circumstance, whether it's narcotic drugs or financial. Or they become victims of exploitation. And that's what we're doing with the human trafficking. And most of them become victims of exploitation. Many of them start out in prostitution as victims of circumstance, whether they can't pay the rent, you know, they have a drug addiction. And next, you know, here comes a pimp and he comes in and says, "Oh, baby, you work for me. I'll take care of you. I'll put a roof over your head. By the way, you're gonna have sex with 10 guys today. And every dime you make, I'm taking from you. I'm going to hold it for you. You know, and when you need something, you let me know." She's fucking making thousands of dollars a day for these assholes, and they take that shit. And they, you know what? Most of the pimps, they just blow it on bullshit. You know, all the pimps cases that I did, I don't think I had a single case where I got a shit ton of money off a pimp.
Just blowing it like
crazy.
Because
they're going out and buying brand new shoes and all kinds of bullshit. You know, they just do it because they like that power control. They're narcissistic.
Wow, that's wild.
And but they don't save any fucking money. And there are pimps that do. I mean, there's pimps who got lots of money, but most pimps are just assholes.
And it's crazy because, like, don't they have like a pimp conference somewhere every year or something?
Well,
they
did the players. They used to have the players' ball. I don't know what happened after COVID, where all these pimps would get there and I actually talk about that in the class, and I actually show an awesome clip from South Park. And it's fucking funny as shit, but it's so real. It's like whoever did the South Park thing with prostitution and when Butters was a pimp, man, they did their homework. And I show some clips in my class, you know, to kind of break up the mood because listen, man, I mean, you sit there and talk about human trafficking and victimization and girls being murdered and kicked and raped and beaten the shit out of and spit on.
It's horrible.
It's heavy, and then you got to lighten the mood a little bit. So I show that Butters, but it's also educational because it's dead on. I mean, it's freaking dead on. But actually, one of the things is Butters is at the players' ball with Down the Magic Wand and a couple other pimps, and it's actually pretty funny if you've never seen it.
I think I've seen it a long time ago. It's an older clip, right?
It's an older clip, but it's the game. The game hasn't changed much. As far as that goes.
Yeah, technology's changed the game a little bit, right?
Technology's changed the game mostly as far as advertising and hookups and doing dates and things like that. But the game's still the game. Pimps are still exploiting the same way. They're recruiting the same way. They're using technology a little bit more to recruit because they'll recruit online. But they're still going to shopping malls and they're still looking for girls with low self-esteem. All that shit hasn't changed, and all that stuff will probably never change.
Wow.
But, you know, the pimps are still doing the same thing. They think they're smarter than we are.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, at times, I think that, one, men and women in law enforcement get dissuaded from being proactive. And you have administrations that are telling them, don't bother with things like this. Don't bother making traffic stops. We don't want you searching cars. We don't want you asking questions. What are you doing? We write tickets. That's what we do. What's the likelihood of somebody receiving this training or some of the things I'm going to ask you now, going out, being proactive and actually interrupting or stopping some human trafficking? As a matter of fact, we had a guy, and kudos to him, Matt Bartlett, and I'll say his name here on the podcast, who's probably going to be close to your class tomorrow. He works
actually
the next
stopping by for a beer.
Yeah.
So actually, he's going to stop by. And at the very end of my class, I invited him to stop by and tell the class exactly what he learned and what he did with it.
So why don't you tell us what you've learned about his situation, what he ran into 2 weeks ago?
So he got a call for, I'm not sure all the details of it.
Right.
It was up in just outside East Rutherford, New Jersey, where my class is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And
I think he's in Carlstadt.
He's in Carlstadt. Yeah, but yeah. From what I understand, that's like right next door.
Right. I think somebody kind of brushed it off to start, but he kind of looked into it a little bit further, right? Something like that?
Yeah, they got a call from an 18-year-old girl that was being held against her will, and they got there, and he saw the signs. He saw, like, this is not right. This is a trafficking victim. Most people will think, oh, you know, like, it's a kidnapping, or you know, it's like, just, you know, or just, you know, domestic dispute. Like, this is IPV, and you know, it's like, no, this is human trafficking. So he saw the signs and intervened and got her out of that. And so taking my class, as far as that non-proactive and stuff, and don't do traffic stops and shit like that. If you told one of those folks, like, are you okay with pimps trafficking girls and just walking away and letting them go, whatever, do whatever you want, because that's what you're letting them do. If you're not going to go out, one thing about human trafficking, if you are not proactive, you will fail, because there is not one trafficking victim that's going to come and call 911 and say, I'm a human trafficking victim, please come help me. It's extremely rare. You have to be proactive. And that's all the cases I did, is because I got up out of my ass, off my ass, got out from behind my desk, went out and made dates, and went out and did things, and went out to where I could find people. And another thing is go into your hotels. And I talk about this, is like, how many hotels do you have in your beat? And how often do you go into that hotel and just shoot the shit with the guy at the front desk? That's a treasure trove of information, not just for human trafficking, but also narcotics. Because they're using these hotels, and those guys are eyes and ears. They see everything.
Right.
They see fucking everything. And go in there. Listen, not everybody that you go at the front desk is going to be on the up and up. You're going to have some shitheads. We had a dude that was tipping girls off.
Yep. We had that too. We did a job at the Days Inn. And we had somebody already in the room. And as soon as narcotics came in, the phone started ringing all over the hotel. He was calling everybody, all the hookers in the place.
Yep.
Narcotics is here. Hide your shit. You know, Vice is here.
So, yeah, we would go do a date at this extended stay America, and we would, like, literally, I get the date, I get the hotel room from the girl, I go up in there, and I get up to knock on the door, and she fucking never answers the door. I'm like, what the fuck? And this happened like 3 or 4 times. I'm like, that son of a bitch at the front desk is tipping them off. We found out later, we had a girl cooperate with us, and he was giving out free hotel rooms for blowjobs.
Whoa.
You know, and so we locked his ass up and charged him with, you know, hindering our investigation, and he got fired. No big deal about that, but I'm sure he'll get a job at 7-Eleven or something. But no, we locked his ass up and charged him. But I'll tell you what, most of those guys that work those front desks, they're a little squirrely to begin with, man. And, you know, you come in there, even if you're in patrol, just go in there and say, hey, I got to take a piss. Where's your bathroom at? You know, and just goes, hey, by the way, here's my card. This is my beat. Call me if you need anything, if you got anything going on. And just stop in there, go in there morning times. Sometimes you get free breakfast.
Build that relationship, right?
Right. Build that relationship, because they are the eyes and ears, man. And, like, I don't know how many times I would just go in there and say, hey, Patricio, man, what you got? What's going on? Oh, man, Tom, I got a girls up in that room. I got the going on. This, I got a pimp back there. I'm like, fuck, it's free information. You know, and the narcs used to use me all the time, because I had such a strong relationship with all the hotels in my county. That the narcs were doing a big wiretap case, and they didn't want to go to the hotel and ask for the folio. So I literally went to the hotel and said, hey, man, I'm looking for this pimp guy, and I don't know, I'm sure what room he's in. Can you print out, like, everybody who's staying here at the hotel? Yeah, sure, no problem, Tom. Prints it out. I take it back, and those guys are like, fuck yeah. But only because because of the relationship I built.
Right, dude.
It's so important to go in there and build that relationship with those guys. But proactivity is the most important thing when you're doing human trafficking cases, because if you're not proactive, you're losing. And I've seen human trafficking units to sit back and they wait for tips to come in, and they don't do shit. They don't do shit. So you got to get out off your ass and go out there. But my class will teach you what to look for. Some different ideas. It's not an investigations class. It's an awareness class. You know, if you need further investigate, call me. And I tell everybody, and Nick German and I do this all the time, and I know Nick German does this as well. That is one of the beauty about Street Cop, is you pay for the class, and the class is over 4 o'clock. That at that point, but the class is never over. Street Cop training class is never over. I'm always available for questions. Between Facebook and Instagram and all the things that Street Cop has going on with social media, these instructors are available all the time. And it's important. Like Nick German is awesome, and Nick will help you anytime. And Nick is a good buddy of mine, and you know we both work for the same department. And I'm smart. I retired, call me. Call me. Let me know how things are going. Call me if you have any. And I get phone calls, and I love getting the phone calls because I love investigations, and I love to dig. Used to dig my hands in. It's like it sucks I don't get to do them anymore. So if I can help in any way, shape, or form, that's what we're here for. And that's, like I said, that's the beauty of Street Cop, is because this is a family. And I honestly feel that. And that's why I enjoy teaching. I've taught for other companies. And then when you walk out the door, you're like, AMF, motherfucker. And I'm out the door. You know, if you need something, figure that shit on you. That's not the way it is here. And I think every single instructor probably feels the same way.
I think we're probably all come together because we're all cut from the same cloth and probably at some level the same human being. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, name one person who works with this company that's a dick. You know, there's not one.
I can't.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know all these people, face to face. I know them well. I know all of you really well. Obviously, lately I've been getting stretched very thin. And I try to remind everybody in the company meetings, like, hey, man, I am doing my best to make it good for you guys. And everybody, the whole company itself. So the downtime that I'm taking, or even doing this podcast and stuff like that, it all counts back towards us doing this great thing. And sometimes, you know, it is a business. I am running a business, but to hear you say things like that, it makes me real proud. And it's not like, oh, look what I've built. I'm like, look at all of us coming together under this thing, right? It has nothing to do with me. And it's amazing. And even in the time where there's mud slung our way at times, to get on a podcast, offer some insight on how to make the world a better place is just phenomenal and profound. And I'm super proud of it, man. And I'm glad that you can see the difference between what we're trying to do. And I'm a guy who's 17 years your junior. No offense. I'm sorry.
I'm an old fart.
Yeah, yeah.
what age come wisdom?
right. But like, you know, for you to sign on to this and believe in it and take a chance with us, and, you know, we all grow together and sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not, but at the end of the day, we all are out here because we have some skills that we want to share with other people to make the world a better place, really, at the end of the day. Do we get paid? Sure, we do. But that's not the – if you actually look at what we're delivering as far as what we charge, this is not a pitch for the company. It's just that the money's a bonus for everybody here.
Right.
People are just so committed to being the best cops they can be and provide the most value. And they've all taken the responsibility, even yourself, to say, look, I could not tell anybody anything. I could take these 35 years of patrol work or 30 years, whatever you did. Was it 35, 32?
26. Well, in patrol, I was only in for six. And
but I was a police work.
I was smart and got the uniform off. And became
right. I don't have to say anything, right? I have a good pension. I have a good job. But you choose to. And it's not like it's astronomical paying stuff. It's just the point that at the end of our lives, we can look back and say, you know what? I did something really good. And we're all proud of that, you know?
And I'll be honest with you, and this is straight from the heart, too. And, you know, trust me, I like to see when the paycheck hits the bank, you know, you got a little smile on your face. But when someone calls me up and says, hey, I took what I learned from your class, and I got a girl out of a situation, I locked up a pimp.
Hey, guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast, and it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally, and we also entertain you as well.
That is way more satisfying than seeing the paycheck hit the bank, because I know that I saved someone's life. The information I will give will save someone's life. Whether I've taught thousands of cops all over the place, and I've been fortunate enough to do this for a number of years. And if I can teach you something, and you can either apply it on the street and save someone's life, make a difference in someone's life, because people don't realize that the world of prostitution is incredibly violent. It's not victimless. These girls are beaten, raped, end up being murdered, suicide, overdose. They end up dead. If you can make a difference and get somebody off the street, that's way more important than anything else, to be honest with you. It's because I know that I'm spreading the word out there, and changing mindsets, changing attitudes. Because trust me, when I got the vice, I came out of a street crimes unit, I was going, we were locking people up every night and going to court all day. And it's just like run. And then I got the vice and I was doing the same thing. I was like, boom, let's lock them up. Because human trafficking wasn't a term. And I wish I could go back and redo it because I was wrong at the way I looked at it. And so I teach to change that mindset,
mm-hmm, right?
To look at girls and women in prostitution or boys in prostitution as human not beings, right? Criminals, they're people, and treat them as such. And I've seen some girls I never treated them badly. I did lock them up, but I never called them bitch or cuss them out. Or I've seen some people treat them very poorly, and that's one of the things that we're trying to change in law enforcement is to. Because pimps, from day one, pimps will literally sit there and brainwash these girls not to trust us. Oh, cops, all they want to do is lock your ass up, call you a whore, do this, that, and the other thing. And what have we done for ages? Exactly that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I did it. I did exactly what the pimp said I was going to do. So now we're in the process of changing that. And we're looking at the pimp as the asshole. The pimp is the one we want to get locked up. The trafficker who's exploiting people, making money off of somebody else is just absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, by just locking the girl up, we're just reinforcing her bond with the pimp.
You know, there's this one variable that people can begin to implement into their life and their careers. It's really important to care. You know, and oddly enough, it is almost taboo in law enforcement to care. But you don't have to be like everybody else. And I say this in class all the time. Everybody in this room came here today because they cared enough to be here. They cared enough to look at this profession and take it so seriously. And they understood every day they get a chance to care for another human being. I mean, it's just... So while you might be surrounded by people that you work with who don't care, you might have superiors who don't care. You got chiefs of police who are telling guys, don't stop cars. Don't pull over cars, traffic stops, or headaches. Essentially what they're saying is, if you're being trafficked through our town, don't worry. The top command staff will ensure that the pimps will not get touched. And some of these guys will say, free passage.
Right.
Drug dealers, pimps, human traffickers, people committing crimes, burglaries, credit card fraud, theft, stolen motor vehicles, you name it. When you tell a police officer, we don't want anything being proactive, you are literally getting a free pass. It's not the people who are good that no longer go bothered.
Right.
Because those people inherently are unbothered. And actually, I help push that those people go unbothered. Why I say to you, stop wasting your time goofing off with silly little tickets. With all this crime going on the roadways, out there in public, all this stuff happening, there's just so many more people to spend your time, energy, and effort on rather than a guy named Pete who's late to work at 8:57 in the morning doing 14 over. And people get very upset when you say things like this because the truth hurts. Because when you've hung your career for 17 years on tickets equal good police work, you're wrong. But you can go to a traffic officer association and they'll let you.
Right.
You'll find 12 other people that'll say, yeah, speed kills, we're slowing people down. Well, yeah, but so do murderers and kidnappers. And all these people go untouched, completely right. Untouched.
Yep.
And so what's the likelihood of that happening? Well, I can almost tell you what the likelihood of that happening is when you do it versus not do it. When you don't make any traffic stops with the intention of stopping crime, you're never going to come across something. And every once in a blue moon, as a traffic enforcer, you trip over something, you step in shit unbeknownst to you. You probably don't even know what's going on.
Right.
And you just... Dude, we had a guy here who murdered a gas station attendant not too far from here in this direction. A day later, a traffic quote-unquote ticket writer in a town down here in Monmouth County, close to my house, the dude gets pulled over, him and the girl. A day after, get the whole, everything they stole the night before, he shot the guy in the head, killed him, cold blood. And they have the video of it. So the guy from the prosecutor's office calls me, he goes, dude, I'm a big fan of yours. You got to see this video of this guy stopping this dude. He has no fucking clue. This dude's throwing up 150 red flags, and you got this day shift guy writing tickets on fucking Route 9, and he has no idea what he's looking at. This guy could have taken his life in a second. Right. But when the cops listen to this, think that their job revolves around just writing tickets, you're going to get yourself fucking killed. But on top of it, the best part is who's that close to solving that murder? 2 months later, they finally get these two assholes that murdered this poor fucking soul over nothing. And the car was found in Virginia or North Carolina, burned in the woods. All that evidence could have been collected right then and there. And that was a chief who's no longer there. But that chief was somebody who's anti-street cop. We don't do that here. That stuff's no good. Our cops go out and we enforce traffic law. You literally pulled over two people that just murdered somebody 20 hours earlier and had no fucking clue.
And you're lucky you didn't get murdered.
And by the way, and then that chief is what? At their funeral, at their wakes, apologize. Oh, we're sorry. We cry with your family. Motherfucker, you're the guy that caused it. How are you denying people the training to learn when there's crime afoot?
Right.
And it's just, we're just such big thinkers here. We're just thinking about these things and how it all correlates back to what we're talking about. So, yeah, man, I'll stand on my soapbox here and I'll never bow down to the fact that I believe that cops should be encouraged to go out, understand the Constitution, employ professionalism, compassion, and kindness, and try to stop crime. I'm sorry. You don't want to send people to my training courses because we advocate for people not being trafficked and pimps raping 13-year-olds. My bad. I know that offends you. And these motherfuckers won't have the conversation. They're terrified.
Right.
I see these assholes in real life, right? They see me, they run for the hills. I saw a guy literally come to an event I was at. I know he's somebody who's anti-me. And dude, he fucking hit it and turned the other way. You would have thought the building caught fire. This dude boogied to the right out because he knows I'm the type of guy that I'm not going to scream in your face. I'm not going to punch you, your lights out. Tell me what's the problem? Where's the pain, man?
Right.
Is it just you? You don't know what you're doing. You're in over your head. You think you're just selfish.
You think you know better.
You think you know better. You're supposed to know, but you don't. But you don't have enough humility to say, I don't. What do you think we should be doing? Yes, the right. It's wild. And, you know, I know this goes to a lot of people's ears. And people say, oh, I had a guy recently tell me, he goes, oh, you know, everybody pretty much knows you're anti-administration. I go, I just had 7 chiefs of police out to dinner with me. What the fuck am I anti-administration? When did that come about? Well, the memes I put, when you treat your officers like they're fucking the scum on the bottom of your shoes, you think I shouldn't address that? I should just ignore that? Let that continue to persist because I'm afraid about my own self-interest of how many more people I could have had in the class because the 9 guys that should have came didn't? I got to understand the small sacrifice now for the big win later. Don't tell me I'm fucking anti-administration because I'm not. Because I got to tell you, I have more fucking friends that are... Who do you think hosts our training? Who do you think's calling us? Chiefs, lieutenants, captains, sheriffs. I got fucking 3 of the biggest named sheriffs in the country coming to speak at my event and they're friends of mine. When did you find out that I was anti-administration? You want to know why I'm friends with them? Because those guys believe in the things that we believe in. They believe in law enforcement as our first objective. Look, man, I got to tell you, there's a fucking guy at my kid's school now. I met him the other day. He's an SRO. I said, were you working the couple schools? He goes, no, just this one. I love it. I love the idea that he's there, right? I don't think that everybody's about running and gunning. And I think, yeah, there's going to be a bunch of different divisions for the agency. I think community policing is important. I think developing these relationships is important.
Absolutely.
But I mean, the whole fucking place has to do it. We still got to go out and enforce the fucking law. And I hear these horror stories of like how bad shit's mismanaged. So if we don't call it out, it just continues. And then we all start to pay the prices for it because how come you weren't there? How come you didn't know? How come you guys aren't trained? We're not waiting for you to resolve and solve it. How fucking nuts is it that cops have to sneak out, not tell anybody their agency, and sneak into our classes because they care so much about doing a good job that they have to hide the fact that they need the training? It's wild, right? It's like it's like a woman sneaking out and learning how to read in 1840 because they weren't allowed to read books,
right?
She's sneaking off into the corner to read and write poetry because if somebody catches them, she's going to be in trouble. It's fucking flabbergasting. And I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care that you're 8% of police departments are like, that guy's trouble. Why? You're going to take the fact that I curse, right? That I've done so much work that some people have written articles about me or have decided to try to come after me in their woke ways because I use foul language. Those people won't sit here today and have a conversation with Tom Stack or me. They won't.
Right.
They won't answer back as to why they're doing nothing with their energy and effort to try to combat human trafficking. You're all full of shit. You're all full of fucking shit. And we're just willing to say that. But guess what? We're not just complaining about it. We're not waiting for you. Tom shows up. He's driving East Rutherford today. He's going to show up and teach us a whole group of cops tomorrow how to stop people from being fucking raped, murdered,
Saving lives.
Yeah, saving lives. Well, you motherfuckers are like, we're doing something about it. You haven't done shit. Who the fuck? Get the fuck out of here. You're full, so full of shit. Guess what? Here's the good news. If you want to change your mind and you subscribe to what we're doing and you want to support us and jump on the bandwagon of what it means to be law enforcement and go out and stop crime, right, professionally, and stop bullshitting around because you're not smart enough to understand what this job is about, hey, man. Open door policy. We've got an instructor here who's talking so much shit about me. I'm not going to say who.
I never talked shit about you.
No, not you. No, not you. Another guy. He's a friend of mine.
So one thing I always used to say when I was in patrol and I was doing FTO, and I would always tell my rookies, I said, you can't make the big play unless you're in the game.
Right.
And they're like, what do you mean by that? I said, well, if you're sitting in fucking 7-Eleven, you're sitting in the station doing nothing, you're never going to make any of the arrests. You're never going to go out and do this. You're never going to do that. So you have to be in the game to make a play. So it's like in football. If you're on a bench warmer, you're sitting on the fucking bench, you're never going to score the touchdown, all right? But you got to be in the game. And I tell you, I just remember this one young girl I recovered out of a hotel. I did a sting op with her and went in there, and I asked her, I said, listen, I said, you need some help. I can help you. And she says, I do. I'm tired. I'm being trafficked. She was being trafficked. She didn't know the word trafficking, but she was basically being trafficked by a pimp. And I got her out of that life and took her a little time to get out. You know, she went back and forth. She never got trafficked again. But I saw her at an event like 3 years later, and she comes up and gives me a big hug and says, you saved my life.
Wow.
And I was like, that kind of took me back a little bit because I never really looked at it like that.
Right.
And I said, no, I didn't, Kelly. You saved your own life. I just pointed you in the right direction.
Right.
She goes, no, you saved my life. And that's the feeling you get. I mean, listen, I was fortunate enough because I was in the game. And I came across a burning car, and I pulled a guy out of a burning car. And I literally saved that guy's life. But it's a different feeling than the life I saved with Kelly because of the exploitation, the constant exploitation at no fault of her own that she was enduring. You know, the guy in the burning car, he got drunk and drove himself into a fucking tree. Okay, you know, but he still needed to be saved, so we saved him. But it's just a different feeling. And so that's why I like to still teach. That's why I still like to spread the message, because there's millions of girls out there right now being trafficked. Kids, young kids. I mean, it's
disgusting,
it's
right?
It just pisses me off.
Yeah.
That, you know, you have a young 15-year-old girl that's being with low self-esteem, who's been raped by her dad and her uncle or whatever fucking life, and now she's being fucked up by a pimp. Now she's being raped by – and that just pisses me off. I mean, they need to be saved. But you also have to work with victim services. You got to make sure that you have services in place because – and I talk about this in my class. I do a whole hour and a half block on victimization and victim services because – as cops, we can't do it. We're not victim advocates. You know, we try to do the best we can. We have to do so much shit, and we wear so many fucking hats. But we got to partner with people who can actually do the work, which is great because your victim is with somebody who cares about them, is safe. They're being cared for. They're getting food. They're getting shelter. They're getting their tattoos removed. They're getting all the shit that they need. And we can go do our job.
Right.
And investigate and lock up the fucking pimp or the trafficker or whoever was exploiting that child, whether it was a John or whether it was a pimp.
You know, I just keep going back in my head to like how even during my career, I was criticized for caring too much. And when you brought up that story about rescuing that guy from the burning car, you know, it's not a well-known thing, but one of our guys happened to have a car crash one evening, and he was actually lucky that a handful of guys who were on the road gave a fuck and cared. Yep. And paid attention to the CAD. And I'm going to go back even a little bit further. I've told this story before, but we got a new CAD system. So on the MDTs, as soon as a call came in, they would put it in the stack. Now in the stack, it would sit there and wait to be dispatched to a car. But the nice thing about it was it would beep when it came in. You'd make a noise, and it'd just draw your attention right away. So if it was like CPR, if it was a first aid call, and it was in your beat, I'd start rolling towards it, right? Especially if it was like trouble breathing. I'm like, oh, this could be cardiac arrest, right? We want to get there,
right?
Because that could be my mother, and I cared enough to rush and start moving that way, put myself to the, my comfort to the side of the moment to ensure that I could do everything I could. And if it was over, whether it was good or bad, I can tell you that, listen, I did the best that I could. We get fight calls, or you'd see calls coming in as fight. And, you know, I'd say, listen, let's just start rolling towards this one. It's kind of weird. There's a fight at this place. It could be a robbery. And a lot of times it'd be a robbery because the guy was getting robbed and started fighting the guys robbing him.
Right.
We were having such impact. I mean, we were killing it. These 10, 20 seconds we were getting out to these calls before, you know, sometimes these radio guys aren't paying attention and they're like, you know, car five, like, I'm here already. Just send it. Put me on location. Like, we're here already. You're not waiting for you. I know you went to go take a piss or something like that. We're not waiting for you. Well, anyway, we had this asshole who, because everybody could see it, the jobs, the pending jobs in the stack, what he would do is if he knew something was in the area, he would start stopping cars or put himself on special checks. He's a fucking dick. He ended up getting fired eventually.
So he wouldn't have to go to the call.
Yeah, that's what he'd do. So he was using this ability where we were all, 99% of us in patrol division, were using this thing to provide a better service to the citizens of the town we worked in. Oh, it was a blessing. And we loved it, right? We were so happy because we were hard chargers. We give a fuck. We all grew up here, right? You know, how many times I've been in people's houses that I know their mother died. Well, anyway, sure. I remember coming to work one day and I turn the computer on and the fucking stack's gone. And I'm in a panic, right? I'm like, what the fuck? So I go back to the sergeant who, not a bad lady, but she was, she didn't do much police work. And I said, what happened to the stack? Literally, as my shift started, she was leaving. I go, what happened to the stack? She goes, well, so-and-so is using the stack. We're watching. We're tracking him. I go, so you're going to punish all of us and the whole town because this fucking asshole. I go, this is the problem. Dude, I'm literally like yelling in the halls. I'm like, this is the problem with all you guys here. You see a problem and you fucking punish everybody. That's the fucking problem with this place. And like every place I worked at, why wouldn't you just go and tell him? Why don't you have the balls, chevrons on your arm, to walk down to that motherfucker's face and say, if we catch you doing it again, you're fucking done. And she's looking. I'm telling Tom, I was like yelling. Then the captain, I said, where is so-and-so? I said, you got to have this in here for us. We need this. So that shift, we worked without it. But fortunately enough, when I came back the next day, they heard me. Now, right.
That was good.
I had the balls to say that. Right. Now let's go to the final part of this story. If I didn't have the balls to say that, my hand to God, I'm not making this shit up. And you know, you might run into people that work to be like, oh, that didn't happen. I fucking take a polygraph on this shit that I say. And my friends who I worked with would tell you that. He is the guy that did that. So now it's 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And it just happens to be a couple guys that are paying attention. Well, probably half the fucking squad is sitting at 7-Eleven, smoking and joking out of their cars, waiting to get dispatched. And these two dudes see a car into a fucking pole or a car into a tree, whatever it is. I was actually off that night. It was my shift. And they fucking race. And they get there as fast as humanly possible. Both pull up at the same time. They get out. The car is now engulfed. They're breaking the fucking windows out with the fire extinguisher. They kill the fire down. They don't know if anybody's in it because it's so black. They reach in, they grab, they get burns, they rip it out the fucking person, drag them down the street. It's one of our guys. Could you imagine if they didn't care enough? If there wasn't just those two guys, or those two cars, I think they're two-man units. So those two-man units who actually gave a fuck, or the guy who probably a year and a half later gave a fuck so much it went in and bitched and complained enough for them to put it back right and had to teach these motherfuckers how to make solutions to problems. We would have lost...
Yeah,
that dude.
Absolutely.
And by the way, that guy had to retire. I mean, they didn't even know it was him. That's how bad he was burned. And this dude was in. Bad to this shape. Day, he's actually. I think he only has a thumb left. He's like his whole.
Wow.
His whole world's upside down. He's still alive. He had to leave. He got an early disability pension because if you get hurt off duty in New Jersey, you're entitled to something. But it's peanuts. The guy's a young guy.
Right.
And he's a good dude. And if it wasn't for them giving a fuck, we would have been at a police funeral, right? But he's alive today. And he owes his life to those who cared. And the most ironic thing is, you know, I didn't work with the guy, but I don't know how much he cared. You know what I'm saying? It's so ironic. So I tell these men and women that are dissuaded and feeling down, like, stop making it about you. You motherfuckers put your hands on that Bible and said, I will do my best. When did you allow everybody else to convince you to stop caring? What the fuck is wrong with people? Stop getting sucked into this muster room toxicity. Don't give a fuck. We didn't get our 1%. That's not what this job is about. You want to make more money, then leave and go do something else. You can't sit here with poopy pants and do a police job. Because not only can you get yourself killed, you can get somebody else killed.
Right.
And that's fucked up. So you should give a fuck enough to pay attention to these things.
I don't know if you knew this, but you made a video right after 2020, the hang in there. Mm-hmm. I play that at the very end of every one of my classes. And I tell people, I said, you know what? The date might be a little bit dated, but the message is still the same. And it's very powerful. I've had people cry. And I've had people ask for that video, and I've given it to them. And so that video you made is very powerful. And it hits home. And I can tell you, I watch the people. I sit there and look at them, watch that. And nobody's on their phone. No one's sitting there doodling, texting, bullshit like that. They take it to heart. And like I said, you know, the message you just gave is pretty much the same message.
Yeah.
My only request to you is, can you update that fucking video?
Yeah. Well, you know, so we do update those videos, right? That was one. So how that video came to fruition was I ranted on a Facebook Live on the way into the office. And Jay, our videographer, you know Jay.
Yeah.
She goes, you got to do that again, bro. And I went, you want me to fucking flip out for 15 minutes again? She goes, yep, I'm going to set up the fucking picture. I'm going to put the lights up. I'm going to set the thing up. Just come in here and start raving and ranting, and I'll make it beautiful, I swear to God. And I went, I don't know if I could do that. It's really, this stuff's not something I could just, it really, I got to get worked up again. You know, and I just want to say one thing before I continue to talk about that is you have two messages to listen to. Right? You have options. You can listen to what we're saying here. And if it's speaking to your soul and it's purposeful, great. Or you can listen to your fucking coworkers that are bums. And it's so easy to become a bum, right? It just, to care, you have to give energy. It's so easy to be a bum. It's just, it's so much easier to be a bum, but it's so much more worth it to not. And, you know, listen, I get it. Your administration has beat you up. I understand that. But, dude, there are these moments that your administration is not going to be around where you can choose to care and just have made a difference in somebody's life. And there's nothing that I am more proud of than those moments that I wasn't even trying to get anybody to recognize my extra effort. Remember my friend Sandy, she was a dispatcher, and Sandy Runkle, she listens to the podcast. Oh, known her for you, we had a lot of good times. You know how close we are to dispatchers. I had wonderful dispatchers. Sandy, you were a bitch once in a while, and you knew that too. But overall, you know, I tremendously adore her. And I believe it was her who said, somebody came to the window, had a problem. I happened to be there, so I said, I'll take him at the window before I go back on the road. I'm a busy agency. I see a walk, and I usually come back. Before I go back to the car, I usually walk into the radio room, see what jobs are in a stack. And I'm like, just give me that one. I'll go out and I'll knock that out. Right? You know what I mean? I'm a worker. I like to work. So they go, we got one at the window. I go, that one's easy. I'll knock that out in fucking 5 minutes. So just give me that one. I'll handle it out. Before I go back on the road, I'll just get the computer here. I'll just knock that one out real quick. So I go to the window. We get bulletproof windows, right? So I forgot what the job was. Maybe if we get her on the podcast one day, you know, she'll tell the story. I'm pretty sure it was Sandy. I said, stand right here for a second. Let me go get some stuff for you. So I went and I started doing research, and I went in. I accessed things that, like, maybe a lot of people didn't know that you could access. I probably saved this person, you know, all the trouble. Something that took me 10 minutes probably took them weeks, maybe if not months, of trying to figure out how to get this stuff. And but we had access to it, and they were able to access it as well. Maybe I was bending the rules a little bit, and I came back and I said, look, you don't got to do any of that stuff. I took care of it for you. Here's this. It's done. Call this, blah, 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 blah. And Sandy said to me, you know, I'm working here 25 years. And, you know, I just don't see people doing things like that. She goes, you literally didn't have to do any of that, but you did. And I'm so impressed. You just saved that person so much trouble. You knew you could do it. These guys know they could do it, but they won't do it. But you do it every single time. You always go above and beyond for these people. You don't even know who they are. I go, imagine it's me walking in, right? Why should I get any different service because I got a tin on my my pocket, right? You know, we have this opportunity to make people's lives better. You know, if you don't know the impact that's going to have when you do something, just that act of kindness. I didn't get a fucking award for that. I didn't ask my sergeant to put me in for a Medal of Honor for going above and beyond. You know what I mean? I don't even want that stuff. I actually told a sergeant one time, I go, honestly feel like throwing all this shit away. He goes, why? I go, in my mind, it doesn't even matter. It's all bullshit to me, right? Like, it's just bullshit. Like, I don't do it for the pins and the shit. I do because I'm a human being trying to, and I took this job because I'm trying to be a fucking human being to other human beings.
All my awards are still sitting in a fucking box in my basement.
I don't even know where they are, man. I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I'm cleaning and shit. I'm like, oh, look at this, like Meritorious Service Award. We were cleaning up the office after like moving here like 6 months ago. I'm like, look at all my meritorious, like ribbons and mayor's awards. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this shit's in here. No shit.
Yeah, huh? I got a whole box. I got a couple boxes of that bullshit too. And I just sit there. I said,
yeah, I'm not saying you shouldn't be proud of the things you've earned and the recognition that you get. I just don't do it for that.
Right, sure. Absolutely.
And honestly, when I don't get it and I deserve it, I'm like, who fucking cares? I don't care.
Right.
Right? I don't give a fuck. And it's a really good place to get to, folks. I'm telling you that.
But I like giving them away. I like giving awards.
Oh, man.
There's I've had jobs where, you know, I've been in a position where I've given awards to people for service and for work and stuff like that, recognizing people. I'd much rather do that than get one because it's more satisfying to me to recognize people's hard work. So
Street Cop Survivor Awards, Tom.
There you go.
I can't tell you how excited I am to hand out 25 to 30 awards this year.
Is that on Wednesday?
Wednesday night it'll be.
I'll be there.
These people who I don't think 99% of cops can even comprehend what they've been through. I don't think people can get what it's like to be shot or significantly injured or be put in a wheelchair for the rest of your life merely for doing your job.
Right.
I don't think that these people get even close to enough credit. I think they're forgotten, and I think it's ridiculous that we do forget them. So we're giving awards.
Thank you for recognizing. That's
awesome.
Of
course, man. But I don't even look for the thanks. It's that giving something to them.
Sure.
We have Michelle. What's Michelle's last name? Michelle Mayer, because she has a different last name as well. She was the cop who was famously known for that traffic stop where that dude punches her in the face and pounds her face in on the ground. That was famous in was it mid-90s that happened? 97.
Yeah, I remember that.
We have Ann Carrizales coming. These people, when I said Ann Carrizales called me, she said, I'm getting an award. I said, I know. She goes, but that happened so long ago. I go, but it still happened. You qualified for it, unfortunately. And she goes, well, nobody's given me anything for a long time. I go, it doesn't mean it didn't happen, right? Michelle's happened in 97. She's getting an award. You know, here we are 16 years later, giving her recognition for what she went through. It was hell.
Right.
Right? How do you, you know, I don't even know her. We just met her. And we're happy to let her know that we still care. So.
Good stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. I want people to hear this message. You know what I mean? I just think about our people, quote unquote, maybe our adversaries. And when I say adversary, I think it's people who just haven't given us a chance, and they make their quick judgment calls about what this company stands for. Because I curse.
Well, so
right?
Do I.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
You know,
right?
It's real, but you know what? It's real life, and that's one thing I hear from people talk about that have taken street cop classes, is they're like, you keep it real. It's not death by PowerPoint. It's entertaining and educational at the same time.
So you learn through emotion, man.
Right. Well, cops are visual learners. You know, you can put a bunch of print up on the goddamn wall, and it goes right through me. I could give a shit about it. I read like two lines. I'm like, I'm tired of this. You know, no, it's good stuff. It's passionate,
and we're continuing to try to make it better. I got to tell you, I think everybody here feels that we haven't even started yet. I mean, we're moving along here, but man, I got a lot of work to do. We'll have a lot of tough roads ahead. 2022 is extremely turbulent, and you know. Commonly, Becca and I will talk here, and she's like, you know, I think everybody's calm because you were calm. She's like, and I got to tell you, I don't know how you're not in a fucking loony bin right now. And I said, one thing that I continue to remember was, I've been on a lot of planes, and I've hit some fucked up turbulence. But eventually, the smooth air returns, and you land safely wherever you got to go. So anybody going through something difficult in life, just know that it's just, turbulence doesn't last forever.
Right.
It just doesn't. I'm not getting off this plane anytime soon, and I know it's going to be turbulent again. But every time it gets turbulent, I got to think about things that you're telling me, the work that we're doing.
The lives we're saving. I mean, not only just with human trafficking, but everything.
Everything.
Everything. It all impacts people's quality of life and saving lives.
Nonstop. Dude.
You know, you're getting fentanyl off the street. That's, look how many lives that saved. The
cops not sticking guns in their mouths.
Right.
How many fucking, we're into, I'm sure well over 25 men and women who have at least told us to our faces, I didn't do it because of you guys. So when I have this bullshit going on with the state of New Jersey, this organization wants to write an article and make us look like fucking demons. I want them to know I don't care. I'm not going anywhere. I've tried to be nice with you people. I want you to sign on to what we're doing. If you really gave a fuck about the world, you would be helping this effort and not hurting it. There's a chief somewhere that doesn't have, I don't know, the chops to ignore something and know the truth and will say, oh, it's just easier that we don't send people to class. And that cop who didn't get to come to training because of something you wrote that swayed their chief's mind goes out and is killed in the line of duty or takes their life because they would have learned something that would have saved their life because we proved they were saving lives. That's on you. And his response to me was, don't put that on me. I go, oh, does that not feel good for you? Does the truth of the bullshit work you do does not feel good to you? I have it recorded. I said, is that, he goes, that's not true. I go, it is so true, except that now it's really starting to, and I actually think, even though he did a fucking decent job on me, I'm going to be honest with you, I think he dialed it back quite a bit because I knew that that had meant the truth actually
right.
got through to him, even though he's still being a dick.
I remember when that Washington Post article came out, and the very next day I sent you an article from Ohio of street cops training two attendees save the lives of 16-year-old girls because they took my class.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, fuck yeah. That's...
Well, he didn't want to acknowledge any of that. That post
article. I mean, yeah. Well, how come he didn't print that shit?
Oh, I know. He ignored it all. Why did Tommy Lahren say that they should take political sides? I'm like, hold on a second. She was a guest speaker. She's not a street cop. First of all, let's talk. What happened to the 99% of the stuff? I mean, Tom Stack taught how to combat human trafficking. Nick German stopped bombs and bomb threats going. Like, we caught people, told people how to intervene and make sure that there wasn't mass shootings. And did any of that matter to you? And his response was, no. That's not what I'm concerned about. I want to know why Tommy Lahren said this. I swear to God, so 99% of it we're not going to report on,
that's
right?
That's like a bullshit.
Dude, it's wild. And that's the game. And you know what? You got to accept that that's the game. You keep your eyes focused ahead on what's important. And I'm going to tell, the beauty thing about this country is you're not going to censor any of this stuff. Even if this bullshit that they're playing, this game in New Jersey, it's so sad. It's such a sad state of affairs. I promise you, I will still be putting out stuff, even if they try to run as much interference as they can, for free. And I will continue to educate everybody here non-fucking-stop, because it's not about what you're trying to push as your political agenda or that you've checked the box and really gone after a big fish. What you're doing to the people of this country and of this state is sad, and you're literally going to have blood on your hands. And they don't care. They're just like, okay, whatever. As long as it's about me, who gives a shit?
Right.
It's wild.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, and again, there's that judgment, that insecurity, that, you know, we do it better. If you did it better, it'd be done. Nobody's doing it better besides us and some other training companies out there. You can't sit around and wait for the government to come up with some fucking solution when there's lives on the line. We ain't doing it. We're just out waiting. So you didn't like that we took our turn? We were stepping out of line according to you? Too bad. So sad. We ain't stopping, because I got to tell you, we got a lot of support nationally, a lot of recognition. We mean a lot to a lot of people. So, and we're not doing anything wrong, by the way. There is nothing being done wrong. Everything we're doing is actually right on the up and up. And I couldn't be more proud of the fucking work that men and women in this company and in this profession and all the staff here does every single day to make this fucking world and country and state and these cops better and a better place.
I mean, you look at my class. I mean, I'm teaching cops a different way to treat somebody.
A better way.
A better way to treat, right. The correct way to treat somebody with a victim-centered approach. I mean, that's just like, I never even heard that fucking word back when I started in Vice, victim-centered. Like, oh my God, like the victim's your entire case. She's not a criminal, she's a victim. The victim-centered trauma-informed approach is what we teach. And that pisses me off that they don't mention that shit. You know, it's like because
doesn't fit their agenda.
It doesn't fit their narrative exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't fit their agenda.
It's bullshit.
You've taken a position on anti-cop. I mean, I try to employ a lot of empathy and compassion for why people would be anti-cop, and none of us are ever going to get anywhere without coming together with an unemotional response and trying to hear both sides. What do you need to accomplish? Tell me why. Why can't we do it the right way where everybody wins? I want to hear it, man. They're unreasonable. And, you know, I just think there's a lack of intelligence, to be quite honest with you. Because when you're intelligent, unemotional, or have emotional control, you actually become somebody that people don't like because you won't fight with them. You won't engage with them. You don't see things their way. They're not as heated. They think you think you're better than they are because you don't act like they do. I know all these people. I'm related to most of them, right? What do you think about that? I don't have an opinion, right? What do you think about this? I don't know. That's not my area of expertise. I know Fourth Amendment and how to save cops and a few other things, and that's about it. I know I'd be a really good dad, right? And I'm super proud of that shit. And anytime somebody takes on a big task, some shit like this, you know, just understand that you're going to be fighting some uphill battles at times. But oh, yeah. I got to tell you, there's so many victories along the way, it's just worth it.
Well, when you are at the top of your game, you're at the top of the field. I mean, it's like my kids' sports teams. We won state championship in football. Everybody hates us.
Yeah.
Everybody hates us. I mean, they get all the – everybody hates us. Same thing with Street Cop. That's what you're getting. I mean, that's what people are hating, you know, because you're doing shit the right way.
But also, like, people are loving, right? So we have so
– Get your lovers.
I just want to always throw that in.
Like, we definitely have
– Oh, we got a big cult following.
Yeah,
right?
We got
– Our people are our people.
Right. But the people who hate are jealous.
And there's no reason for it, to be honest.
To a certain point. Yeah, that's just the way it is, right?
I know, dude. You know? And
it's
hard for a guy like me to conceive that because I literally am not jealous of anybody. I literally am not.
Except my hairline.
Yeah, I'm jealous of how. Yes. Actually, I've been trying to avoid that hairline for a lot of years. Yeah. I've been looking at my hair today a little bit. I'm like, oof, we got to fucking must start looking into a little some extra stuff here. Anyway.
So you got to lighten up a little bit, right?
Yeah. Well, listen, Tom, this was one of the best episodes I ever recorded. I know Frankie's going to say that as soon as we fucking finish.
I was like, you're going to edit that shit out, right? It puts in everyone.
It's all staying in, Tom.
It's standard.
That's the magic of this podcast is how fucked up we really are. But I appreciate you being here, man. And if you guys haven't checked out Tom Stack's training, go to streetcop.com. It's legit, guys. And I got to tell you, sometimes we look at some of these classes and we're all scratching our head as to why they're not the most attended, why these chiefs and politicians, knowing this stuff exists, are not funding this tremendously. Don't talk out of two sides of your mouth. Put your fucking money where your mouth is. You don't even got to come up with these programs. We've got to design. Bring it to your politicians. Ask them if this is something they concern themselves with. And if so, guess what? There's a guy here who's very amicable, very knowledgeable, and has a giant heart and gives a fuck that will teach you how to combat those things. And that's our job. So I appreciate you being here, man.
Yeah, and that's all these people like, oh, we don't have human trafficking. It's like, it used to be like with gangs. Like, oh, we don't have gangs. Oh, we don't have human trafficking. Bullshit. I can tell you do. So, you know, hey, if you're interested in hosting, I'm ready to come and drop some knowledge, put tools in the toolbox.
Good shit. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.